Miss Bartlett, in her room, fastened the window shutters and locked the door, and then made a tour of the apartment. It was then that she saw, pinned up over the washstand, a sheet of paper, on which was scrawled an enormous note of interrogation. Nothing more. "What does it mean?" she thought, and she examined it carefully by the light of a candle. Meaningless at first, it gradually became menacing, obnoxious, portentous with evil. She was seized with an impulse to destroy it, but fortunately remembered that she had no right to do so, since it must be the property of young Mr. Emerson. So she unpinned it carefully and put it between two pieces of blotting paper to keep it clean for him. Then she completed her inspection of the room, sighed heavily according to her habit, and went to bed. It was pleasant to wake up in Florence, to fling wide the windows, to lean out into sunshine, with close below the Arno gurgling against the embankment of the road. Miss Bartlett tapped and came in, and having commented on Lucy's leaving the door unlocked, and on her leaning out of the window before she was fully dressed, urged her to hasten herself, or the best of the day would be gone. By the time Lucy was ready, her cousin had done her breakfast, and was listening to the clever lady among the crumbs. A conversation then ensued on not unfamiliar lines. Miss Bartlett was, after all, a wee bit tired, and thought they had better spend the morning settling in, unless Lucy would at all like to go out? Lucy would rather like to go out, as it was her first day in Florence, but of course she could go alone. Miss Bartlett could not allow this. Of course she would accompany Lucy everywhere. Oh, certainly not. Lucy would stop with her cousin. Oh, no, that would never do. Oh, yes! At this point, the clever lady broke in. She said that she was going to spend a long morning in Santa Croce, and if Lucy would come too, she would be delighted.
I will take you by a dear, dirty back way, Miss Honeychurch, and if you bring me luck, we shall have an adventure.
Lucy said that this was most kind, and at once opened the Baedeker to see where Santa Croce was.
Tut, tut, Miss Lucy! I hope we shall soon emancipate you from Baedeker. He does but touch the surface of things. As to the true Italy, it is only to be found by patient observation.
This sounded very interesting, and Lucy hurried over her breakfast and started with her new friend in high spirits. Italy was coming at last. Miss Lavish, for that was the clever lady's name, turned to the right along the sunny Lungarno, then darted under an archway, and she stopped, and she cried,
"A true Florentine smell! Every city, let me teach you, has its own smell."
"Is it a very nice smell?" said Lucy, who had inherited from her mother a distaste to dirt.
"One doesn't come to Italy for niceness," was the retort. "One comes for life. Buongiorno! Buongiorno!"
Bowing right and left. So Miss Lavish proceeded through the streets of the city of Florence, short, fidgety, and playful as a kitten. It was a treat for the girl to be with anyone so clever and so cheerful.
"Buongiorno! Take the word of an old woman, Miss Lucy. You will never repent of a little civility to your inferiors. That is the true democracy. Though I am a real radical as well. There! Now you're shocked."
"Indeed I'm not," exclaimed Lucy. "We are radicals too, out and out. My father always voted for Mr. Gladstone until he was so dreadful about Ireland."
"I see. And now you've gone over to the enemy?"
"Oh, please. If my father was alive, I'm sure he would vote radical again, now that Ireland is all right. And as it is, the glass over our front door was broken last election, and Freddie is sure it was the Tories. But Mother says nonsense, a tramp."
"Shameful. A manufacturing district, I suppose?"
"No, in the Surrey Hills, about 5 miles from Dorking, looking over the Weald."
Miss Lavish seemed interested and slackened her trot.
"What a delightful part! I know it so well. Do you know Sir Harry Otway? A radical, if ever there was."
"Very well indeed."
"And old Mrs. Butterworth, the philanthropist?"
"Why, she rents a field of us. How funny!"
Miss Lavish murmured.
"Oh, you have property in Surrey?"
Hardly any, said Lucy, fearful of being thought a snob. Only 30 acres, just the garden, all downhill, and some fields.
Miss Lavish was not disgusted, and said it was just the size of her aunt's Suffolk estate.
Italy receded. They tried to remember the last name of Lady Louisa, someone who had taken a house near Summer Street the other year, but she had not liked it, which was odd of her. And just as Miss Lavish had got the name, she broke off and exclaimed,
"Bless us and save us! We've lost the way!"
Certainly they had seemed a long time in reaching Santa Croce, the tower of which had been plainly visible from the landing window. But Miss Lavish had said so much about knowing her Florence by heart that Lucy had followed her with no misgivings.
"My dear Miss Lucy, we've taken a wrong turning. What are we to do? Two lone females in an unknown town. Now, this is what I call an adventure."
Lucy, who wanted to see Santa Croce, suggested as a possible solution that they should ask the way there.
"Oh, but that is a word of a craven. And no, you are not to look at your Baedeker. Give it to me. I shan't let you carry it. We will simply drift."
Accordingly, they drifted through a series of those grey-brown streets, neither commodious nor picturesque, in which the eastern quarter of the city abounds.